You know, Dennis, what began as a story about Asian gangs in Atlanta has evolved into something more. Now, there's a filmmaker, Eunice Lau, whose A-Town Boys unveils the struggles among young people of Asian descent. And she says it's torn between the status quo of their heritage and assimilating with Western culture.
Well, take a listen to this. Danny Un, a music producer, describes the identity that young Korean Americans struggle to face.
There's no model for Korean American. I am the model. He is the model. She's the model. We're the first generation of Korean Americans born. We're writing a chapter in the U.S. history book that will be spoken about in high schools in 30, 40 years. The Koreans that were born in America, that's us. There is no pre-that. We're literally figuring that out today. And I don't think anybody should dictate for us except for ourselves. We can be whatever we want to be. As painful and annoying and as ridiculous as it was, I think it's one of the best places to be.
And Danny Un, an Atlanta music producer, joins us now in our studio. And joining us by phone as well is the filmmaker Eunice Lau from NPR's New York Bureau. Thank you both for being a guest on A Closer Look. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Eunice, I want to start with you. What inspired you to tell this story and why tell it from Atlanta?
I actually learned about the story from a Korean-American actress who was working on my set 4 years ago. She grew up in Atlanta, and I just was so fascinated with her stories of how she, you know, became part of a crew. And so I asked her if she could bring me back to Atlanta to, you know, talk with some of the boys and meet with the gang leader, and she said yes, and that's how the journey began.
So Eunice, tell us a little bit more about the people who are in this documentary and why gang life appealed to them more than the stereotype that we hear of the privileged tiger class. And was that the only choice they had, one or the other?
Well, I think this film, the main characters in our film actually come from the low-income immigrant families. They are second generation in America, from Korea as well as Cambodia. And so they didn't really have any, you know, guidance or any ideas about, you know, what they could do when their parents are at work. So they do suffer from some neglect and boredom. And also they face a lot of bullying in school. And so being part of a gang gave them the sense of belonging and protection. So it's individual circumstances that led them towards gang life, but it's not an either-or situation.
Because I think a lot of people, when they think of the Asian American community, especially youth, think of the kids who excel in school and who are driven by parents. But the Asian American community is incredibly complex with lots of different languages spoken, people from different backgrounds. Is that something that most Americans who are not Asian aren't really aware of, that complexity?
Yes, exactly. So what we hope to achieve through this documentary as well is to show how diverse the Asian American community is. And that is often not captured on camera. So it's a chance for us to sort of also break this myth about, you know, the Asian American community as being the minority, model minority. And because as long as we have this myth, we don't deal with the problems or, you know, understand what they are going through and think about how to help them. It's very easy to just for policymakers to say, oh, you know, they're very successful, they don't need any help, and therefore we do nothing about it. And it's also used as an excuse when you perpetuate this myth about a certain group in America that they are doing well, so why can't others do it? And using that as an excuse also not to do the basic that, you know, we need for immigrant families, basic health care, you know, that they need a little bit more help, their kids who do not, their parents do not come into this country speaking the language, and how they could actually get help in order to, you know, excel along with the other Americans.
Eunice, as you went inside the life of our guests, the gang members here, as you went inside gang activity, was there anything that really sort of stood out to you or really surprising to you when you interviewed these young people?
I think the common thread that you know, that I learned from their lives were this constant bullying. I think it's also because of the stereotype image of Asian American males that they are weak, they're nerds, that they get picked on in school. And, you know, it's still happening. And I just, you know, it's quite frustrating or, you know, painful to see how there's no help, you know, coming forth. And so they sometimes just have to find other means in order to fit in or to get over the stigma and to deal with the bullying. So it's just, you know, Eugene, who is the oldest among them, who's 37, he has got more than 10 years age gap. And so he was maybe, say, a generation before them, and yet he went through the same experience. So, you know, and then now we're hearing some stories of, you know, what the kids of some of these boys that we featured are going through in school. So, you know, the problem is still there.
I want to bring in Danny Oon. Danny, as you listen to what Eunice was talking about, the common thread there in interviewing and talking with these young men, you could relate to that?
Yeah, very easily. And it's interesting because I do a podcast, and our subject yesterday that we were talking about was Jeremy Lin. Mm-hmm. And the reason...
NBA basketball player, point guard.
LA Lakers. Yeah. Uh-huh, from Harvard. Yep. And he's had an interesting struggle to be accepted into the NBA because he doesn't look the part. But that's not what we were talking about. What we were talking about was I was expressing my frustration that all over YouTube, you see clips of Kobe Bryant punking Jeremy Lin hard, and he doesn't stand up for himself. And I don't know if it's his Christian background or his conservative upbringing, but a lot of it is within the Asian culture is be polite, assimilate, do what you got to do so they're accepted by American society. And Kobe Bryant is the alpha male. But I don't know. The frustrating part for me was, why don't you stand up for yourself, Jeremy Lin? Why aren't you yelling back? Why aren't you cursing back? Why aren't you defending your right to be in the place that you're at? And I think in high school, we suffered a lot of the similar things.
I just read an article about the situation with Jeremy Lin and Kobe Bryant. But and to be fair, is it more of just his personality? Because he says, I'm not that type of guy that will get in somebody's face, or, you know, the perception that Asian men just aren't, they're not going to be confrontational. They're not going to get back at somebody who's in their face. So this is the personality of Jeremy Lin.
For sure.
But you would want him to stand up to sort of debunk the myth about Asian men.
Yes, exactly. I'm not saying Kobe Bryant's specifically going after Jeremy Lin because he's Asian.
Sure.
I think it's more, if I bite, he's not going to bite back, no matter what color he is. And he tests Jeremy, and Jeremy doesn't bite back. But that's a personal relationship between the two of them. As an Asian American male on the outside, I'm seeing an Asian American male who's high profile, has the skills to be there, has worked his butt off to earn his spot, to only get degraded and shot down by the best player on their team and not say a word. And for me, I'm afraid that's going to help perpetuate the stereotype.
Does that mean, though, and I'll start with Danny, and Eunice, you can jump in whenever you like here, but does that mean that many Asian American young men who feel that bullying and that pressure to assimilate say, okay, a gang is my only option here? Are there circumstances such that they feel that's a choice they have to make?
Well, let's talk about the evolution in the word gang. For me, my personal story, so growing up in Dunwoody, which is a Jewish and white neighborhood, but the high school is half black, half white because of a program called M2M.
And minority to majority.
Yes, and they would bring kids from all black high schools to Dunwoody. So we grew up there, and of course, off bat, you're a minority amongst minorities. You look different, you smell different. Depending on what age you came to America, you're dressed different. So you get picked on. And it's not a gang yet. It's just you finding similar faces, similar struggles, similar pain, and saying, we can get together and protect one another.
Yeah, it's like a clique or a group in any you find them in any high school.
Just like how the Crips started back in the 70s. Very similar story. It's young black males who felt oppressed and ridiculed and had no power because they have no money, they have no voice, they have no vote. We're just going to get together and figure out how to protect ourselves. And that eventually evolved into gangs because of greed and power and narcissism.
Eunice, what do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, Danny basically touched on all the points, and he's the best person to speak on it. But for me, from what I see, is that it was just this you know, this search for identity is very much, you know, one of the reasons, and this feeling, the sense of belonging and the search for acceptance and love is very strong there. So it's to them, it, you know, it started off with, you know, it's cool to be part of something, and with you know, the way that we socialize, when you are you're more than one person, you are able to speak louder and you're more confident and you have, you know, a sense of self-esteem that you don't have previously, because, you know, people mock at you and make fun of you because your parents don't speak English properly. And now in a gang, you learn the language and you pick up certain manners that you don't, you know, you can't do from your parents. So this is for them, you know, some kind of a prep school, you know, being part of the gang.
We're talking with director Eunice Lau and music producer Danny Un about the documentary A-Town Boys, which explores the struggles of Asian youth as they try to assimilate in Western culture. And among the subjects of the documentary are some Asian gang members here in Atlanta.
Danny, did you join a gang?
No, but I pretty much started my own genesis of what could have eventually turned into one, yes.
Explain it.
So growing up in Dunwoody High School, there was only like 5-10 Korean males. Because if we're talking about gangs, you're usually talking about the male machismo. You know, we're social creatures, and stereotypically, the average male wants to be the alpha. And if you know you're not the alpha and you're constantly getting picked on, you're constantly getting pressed down, you're unpopular, which, again, with guys, we want to be attractive to women, and that's not good for that either, right? So I it wasn't me. My best friend growing up was a gentleman named Danny Beck, and he was the first one to fight back. He got chopped in the bathroom by 5 black guys. It was him and my friend Singy, I believe, and this was in middle school. And before this incident, we would just get picked on individually, pockets of white kids, black kids, Mexican kids, and, you know, we would just get beat up or picked on. Danny Beck swung back, got beat up, but the precedent was set. We're no longer going to just get bit on. We're biting back, too. And from there, all of us started to come together because we felt a sense of power. We felt a sense of safety. As long as we're around Danny, if he punches, then we're all going to jump in and punch as well. Even if we're going to get beat up, it's better than just sitting there and taking it on the chin.
Danny, I'm curious, did you talk to your parents at all about the frustration and the bullying that you and your friends were on the receiving end of?
Unfortunately, and I think this is the case for many Asian Americans, they weren't available to talk about it. Growing up, my parents owned a restaurant, and restaurants don't close till midnight, you know what I mean? And so my grandma raised me, who doesn't speak English, and I don't speak Korean very well, so there's no communication there, other than do your homework, you know, go to bed, change your clothes. So my parents, at that age, that middle school, early high school age, they weren't available. They weren't around.
Because, forgive me for interrupting, but I think that's an important point. And Eunice, feel free to add to this too. Danny, I think a lot of folks feel that with Asian families that they tend to stay intact more than, say, the families of other minorities who end up in gangs. Mm. That the family is still there, so they wouldn't need that family feeling they get from a gang. What you just said about them just there but not there, is that why a lot of young men end up in gangs, even though both parents might be around?
Sure. Everybody needs, desires a mentor, someone to look up to, a big brother, father figure, whatever it is. And if you don't have one, right, if you don't have one, then where you're at, you'll seek that by nature, because most people aren't leaders. Most people are followers. And if your father's not the one setting the example, you're going to look for it somewhere. And it's a roll of a dice, to be honest, because let's say there's 10 Korean kids at Dunwoody High School. 8 of them might pursue studies because they just didn't have the willpower, or they didn't have that attitude or that influence. But the 2 kids who decided to go down that route, it's a roll of a dice. I mean, my best friend was Danny Beck, again, right? So that was just, when we were 6 years old, we were making bonfires in the front yard. There's nothing to do with violence and gangs and any of that nonsense. You're just playing Nintendo, you know what I mean? But as you grow up, I'm already attached to him, and I followed him. So he led the way. I felt safe. I felt powerful, popular. No one was picking on me. And the ironic thing is, by my junior year, that whole crew, there was 8 of us, 6 of them had dropped out.
Did they join gangs?
Or essentially started their own, yeah. And then I was no longer around them because I stayed in school. And they were like, if you're not down for the cause, you're going to sit there and get an education. We're not on the same boat anymore.
Eunice, was that the experience of some of the young men that you talked to, that even though they might have had both parents, the parents weren't available all that much?
Yeah, I mean, it's because you don't grow up, because your parents are not available, especially the fathers, you don't have a habit of going to them for advice or to tell them about your problems. So even though they are around and the family is intact, there is no communication. So like for Vix, his father learned about what was really going on and then really started a conversation after he, went to jail, or he was arrested in this big, event in 2 years ago. And then he began to talk about his regrets of not being there for his kids. And so he began to establish a relationship with him, was really there. He's a really good man, but he just didn't know that he needed to be there. He just thought the priority was to put food on the table. And he said maybe money wasn't everything, and that, you know, being here and earning less was just as important. Not that they were like earning a lot, but he was really working 20, you know, hours a day on the road, you know, 21 days a month, just to put food on the table and provide for his son. That's amazing. But at the same time, you know, the sacrifices was that he wasn't able to be a role model for his son.
Eunice, I'm curious, of the young men that you featured in your film, are many of them in jail?
They're all in jail right now. And, we're waiting for them to come out. I mean, for Harrison, he is due to be released sometime this year. For Jamie Long, he is in for 4 years. And for Eugene, he is still awaiting trial, and I think he might be put away indefinitely.
Let's listen for a moment to something that one of the young men you just mentioned talked about. His name is Jamie Busy Long. He's a Cambodian-American rap artist. And he's recounting his childhood and how his mom, who fled the civil war in Cambodia, talks about life in Georgia as a single parent.
My mother and my father, they divorced when I was 3 years old. So, you know, I never saw my mother and my father happy together.
It's really hard because I have to work and, you know, take care of the kids. I've been working like 12 hours a day. I just come home a little bit, cook, and take care of the baby a little bit, and time to go sleep and get up back, go back to work.
And Danny, your parents opened the first Korean restaurant in Atlanta back in 1979. So can you identify with that? And you even had some, their restaurant even had some pretty famous patrons, Ted Turner and the wrestler Ric Flair.
Ric Flair, yeah. I was sharing that prior to. But can I interject?
Sure.
On a similar point? But even if my father was available, what kind of advice was he going to give me anyways? What did he know about America? What did he know about growing up in a high school in America? What did he know about getting picked on as a 13-year-old? He's busy, like Eunice said, trying to figure out, how am I going to feed this kid? How am I going to feed my wife? And so the only thing they knew how to do was bring our culture to America. We had no choice. The only thing that he could do, no English, no education, no understanding of how this business or this state, Georgia, works. So what we did was, okay, we make Korean food. There's no Korean restaurants in Atlanta. There's none. So let's go ahead and open one up. Let's just gamble. We're so desperate. We don't have a choice. Let's just see what happens. And they opened up a Korea House on Peachtree and 6th.
I remember that, yeah. I remember that restaurant, yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
You remember that restaurant?
I do.
That is crazy.
Yep.
So yeah, so my father was the waiter, and I don't know how he waited because his English was terrible. It's much better now, but it's still broken, you know?
So Danny, let me ask you this then. What role can you play, either as a mentor or, I don't know if you have kids of your own, what role can you play to maybe change this experience for others in your community?
I think there's the stereotypical correct answer, but I think for me, in my scope and my experience, the right answer is broadening the scope of possibility. I think growing up, we were very, very limited to you study as hard as you can, and there's probably five jobs that are acceptable and respectable and honorable as an Asian American, and that therefore that will perpetuate our family into success, to luxury, to convenience. And it's just not possible. How many doctors and lawyers can a nation have? If everyone's a doctor and a lawyer, then who's trying, you know, who's taking care of the other jobs? And so I think it's the ability to have possibility, to truly say there's an American dream, and that's not just those occupations.
And Eunice, in the film, is that sort of where we come out? I mean, you talk a lot about, in the film, about the road in. Is there a road out?
Yeah, you know, without giving, you know, the story away, what we are trying to say as well, you know, that through their journey to realization is they can be who they want to be. And for them, at the end of the day, I feel like, you know, they succeeded in spite of, you know, the problems that they went through, the missteps that they made. Because at the end of the day, they did find love, and they realized how their family, their parents loved them so much, and were very supportive of them in their career as rap artists. And you know, when Vix actually and Busy, they both came together to compose this new album, this single, Tired, and he sent it to me. And when I first listened to it, you know, I just cried because I could identify with the journey they wrote about, what they went through, how they have suffered. And I could identify with it because I was with them the last 4 years and I witnessed it. And for them to come to that realization of what was important, family, love, not gangs, was a very emotional moment for me.
The film is A-Town Boys. It's a documentary by director Eunice Lau. We've also been speaking with music producer Danny Un, who's from right here in Atlanta. Thanks to both of you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.